LSG Media presents the Walking Dead Podcast. All right, we're coming in hot today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dean. That's Matthew. How you doing, Matthew?
I'm good. I was hoping a little bit deep down that you might sing the Welcome Back, Cotter theme song to me.
I got you.
But,
Welcome back.
That's it. Hey. Hey.
You crawl under the garbage can.
Survive under the dumpster.
Glenn is alive.
That's that.
Newsflash. Glenn is back.
Oh, man.
I know that everyone was on the edge of their seats because the production team kept very, very tight-lipped about this thing with Glenn.
Yeah.
So I know
I really
you guys...
like that they step back and let the show just speak for itself and let the content of the material, you know, say what it had to say and not, you know, add, I don't know, chintzy, glittery bullshit around the edges to you know, clutter everything up. It's a really good choice that they, you know, refuse to do that.
Absolutely. Very cool the way they played it real tight to the chest on the Talking Dead, right?
Yeah. No cutesy, winky bullshit, nudge, nudge, laugh, laugh.
Nothing of the sort.
Oh my
no
God.
Bereavement sweaters. No fuckery.
No fuckery.
Oh,
I don't think.
But wait a moment. Let me go back in time.
Perhaps we are mistaken, and indeed, fuckery is afoot.
Oh my word, you are correct, sir. Fuckery is afoot.
Oh, I smell it, the telltale smell of fuckery.
I thought our inquisition into fuckery rooted out all evil. But we were wrong,
man.
Mr. Anderson. We were very wrong.
We were, except that we were actually exactly right as far as our own personal predictions on this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they weren't too controversial. He's either alive or dead, 50-50. We just happened to guess right.
That is true. That is true. And I also love how probably first-time listeners are going, what the fuck are they talking about?
That's true. Yeah, well, if you don't know, go back and listen, bitch.
There we
go. Go back and listen to past episodes, you lazy bitch.
Damn.
So, pre-credits... Glenny boy takes his very slender and aquiline features slides gracefully, gracefully as only a slender, beautiful man can do.
This
much like Legolas.
Yeah, that's
slips
true.
Under the, yeah, he needs a blonde wig.
Yes.
Slips under, although they're nothing alike, right? Slips under the dumpster. And kills a few walkers, and now he has Walker Shield 5000.
Yep.
And then we get somber electric guitar in Cicada and the Georgia Sun whisking Glenn gently to sleep.
Exactly.
Yes.
And you know, I gotta say, I'll admit this, and I know... I've already looked at the comments. I know how a lot of our listeners feel and the internet at large. I gotta say, me personally, I'm not bothered by this. This is still in the realm of plausibility to me. I mean, the idea that somebody would be scrambling at the last possible second for anything nearby to whatever they could possibly do. Because basically, Nicholas's body on top of him probably bought him 10 to 15 seconds before they were like, oh, wait, look, guys, underneath this buffet is another buffet. And so, yeah, you know, it's believable to me that he would be in absolute, like, hyper, you know, a vigilant mode of like, holy shit, I got to find some way out of this, pulls himself by the, you know, whatever he can get his fingers wrapped around and just hoists himself up underneath the dumpster. I buy it. I can deal with this. I like that he had to wait under there for a long time, but, you know, they imply a day and a half, maybe 2 days. It's good.
Yes. I think that people would not be as upset as they are if we didn't have a egregious case of fuckery.
Exactly.
Because... when you watch it originally and you think about the episode a second time, you start to say, man, I don't know. Is that Glenn dying? I'm not really sure. And then we get a break. And then we get a break for such a long time that people don't even give a single fuck about Glenn anymore. They're like, I don't care. No, absolutely not. It reminds me, what the fuck does it remind me of? It reminds me, Eddie Murphy had a stand-up routine. It was either in Delirious or Raw back in the day.
Both
and
good.
He was talking about, right? He was talking about, like, he's like, you know, your woman doesn't let you fuck her, and she makes you wait, and she makes you wait, and she makes you wait, and when she finally does, you're like, fuck you, I don't want anymore, right?
He has I don't care.
He has this whole, he's like, fuck you, I'm not, get out of here, right? He has this whole bit about it. It's really funny. And I immediately thought of Eddie Murphy in that bit when I was like, you know what? I don't go fuck yourself. How much longer you can make us wait for this? It's silly.
You held out too long on us Walking Dead.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, but it does bring up an interesting kind of meta question of when is too long for a cliffhanger? Because there, you know, the classic idea is, oh, a cliffhanger, and that's what, you know, brings you to the next episode where you're going to get your answer. But holding out over one episode and then getting the, you know, getting to the answer the episode after, heightens the tension. When is one too much? What's the straw that breaks the camel's back as far as like, okay, we really want to know, we really want to know, we really want to know. All right, it's been four episodes. Now we're already looking at other things. We don't care as much anymore. Like, that seems like a tough recipe to figure out. But I'm thinking, if I'm putting myself in the shoes of a showrunner or a head writer, I'm like, I want to ratchet up the stakes and the tension and make people wait, but you don't want to make them wait so long they don't give a shit by the time it happens. So I don't know. That it's kind of a tough nut to crack.
Right. You have to remember, too, as well as I don't mean you, Matt. I mean the royal you, the universal
I have
you.
To remember? Jesus Christ, Dean, let me finish my beer.
No, but it's, you know, if you're in the writer's room and you're putting things together and you know the whole story and you've seen everything, to you it might not seem like a long time. Which brings up the question of the Netflix binge watch, the video on demand, the propensity for the modern day television fan to binge watch TV shows, Netflix originals, the Jessica Joneses, the House of Cards, all of these shows, when you sit and you just fucking binge watch, suddenly you go, okay. Like, these things seem to come much faster. For us in the real world, we're waiting, and there's a week. And in that week, there's a lot of good TV on, okay? The Walking Dead is a good show. There's great shows on, right? And this we're watching all these great shows and watching how they handle things. And all I hear is people talking about how great Leftovers is this year. And I wish I was on that bandwagon, but I'm not because I haven't seen the first season and all this shit. And Daredevil's great. And this is good. And Gotham's picking up. And this Jessica Jones show is badass. And Arrow's pretty cool for CW and blah, blah, blah. And all these good shows are on. Great. Awesome. And then all this happens between the time you watch Walking Dead and then you watch Walking Dead. Now, I know there's the fanatics who are Walking Dead and that's it. I watch Walking Dead. And they grudgingly fill the time with Game of Thrones in the offseason. You know, I know.
They furrow their brow and say, this will do.
Yes, I know. I know the fans out there. I know who you are. And I'm okay with that. But we have this weird paradigm shift into the binge watching culture that I'm not going to say that the showrunners have this idea in mind that next year when every year there's going to be new Walking Dead fans, right? So I wonder what the perspective will be like for that person who just goes ahead and watches the whole fucking thing. Are they going to be as annoyed as we are because we literally have a span of days, multiple weeks in our lives between the viewings. And it's funny, I've thought about that a lot. I don't know if that will affect them. I'm not really sure. It's like people I know who are watching Game of Thrones now who are doing things like, you know, the crazy cliffhanger and the way that the season one ends and people are like, oh my God, fucking boom, they buy season two. They watch four eps. And I'm like, fuck you. I had to wait a year after that end. You know what I'm saying? So you can tell. You know what I mean? I don't know, man. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I feel you. And I'd swear, if you had asked me a year or two ago, you know, a season or two ago in Walking Dead about this, I think, and I still think this is mostly true, that your showrunners, your show creators, even your network executives probably are at this point saying, Okay, we're aware that not everybody, but there's a large portion of our viewership at this point is watching the show after the season has ended in big blocks, maybe plowing through the entire season in 3 days. And we have to kind of maybe start to cater to that a little bit in one sense. But I gotta say, I feel like this season of The Walking Dead in particular, especially, seems very old school. Nah, we are dragging out this week long sure. wait for you. And like, sure. that's how they're building it. And this is also because I am so thoroughly not a binge watcher. I can do 2 to 3 episodes of any given show max, and then I'm done. Then my most recent binge, this is the first time I've binged on any show in like 2 years. I watched Master of None in probably 2 days, but those are also half hour comedy, you know, episodes. Right, it's right. light and you can breeze through them. I can't sit there and watch. I can't binge The Walking Dead. I just can't do it. I like having the week. I like having the time to think about it and to discuss it and talk about it and joke about it with people. But yeah, this particular, you know, this narrative arc we've had recently with Glenn and with Rick and the Horde and everything has felt very much like we are going to milk the time between these episodes to sure. really prolong. What I feel like they were going for was trying to prolong the effect, but like kind of like what we're saying, it's like I'm not sure if they kind of overstayed their hand, where it's like the effect they were going for went just a little bit too long and it right. kind of lost people. Because I'm totally okay with the idea of, oh, we get this crazy, you know, horrific image of Glenn looking like he's being ripped apart by zombies, and then we get no definitive answer for a period of time, you know, maybe an episode or two. But even I was saying at the top of the show, I'm fairly okay with seeing the outcome now, seeing the way Glenn got through this and getting, you know, this. At this point, I understand why other people are like, fuck this, you dragged me on, I don't care. Like, I get it. I think sure. it's a problem that hopefully they're going to adjust to in the latter half of the season and the next.
There's a certain measure of artistry in storytelling. And you might be like, fuck you, The Walking Dead's not art. Well, some people might think it is. There's certainly artistry involved.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And it's possible that their interpretation of the story, which is going to be viewed a lot differently, they're not the TV watcher at home who is waiting. That's a perspective they don't really have. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know, some people were like, all right, whatever, and some people weren't. So I've talked... And to speak to what you were saying, I think maybe it's just a happy accident. I think it's a happy accident that this will serve a binge watch better, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming the numbers will dictate to us, which I don't have handy, but I'm assuming the numbers will show that people still watch The Walking Dead live more than they watch it on DVR, more than they're purchasing it, more than... I'm assuming the lion's share. The reason they keep getting renewed is because their statistics are outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I'm assuming that they're always going to be catering to the live TV audience before anything. This just so happens to likely be a benefit if you are a binge watcher. You're just going to kind of plow through. I mean, in 2 days, you're going to know. You're not going to speculate for weeks and look at stills online, you know?
We've 4 weeks since the episode where it happened? And whereas a binge watcher, it's like, oh, shit, this is horrible. I'm going to have to wait till tomorrow afternoon to fucking know what happened.
It's Monday. Like, I got to wait till Wednesday? What?
Oh, my God. My life.
Yeah. So, life. I mean, that's a good point. But here's how I felt. I kind of went, so Glenn's alive. Sure. Mm-hmm. He crawls into the dumpster, and I thought to myself, and this is something you and I hinted at in the beginning, and that's we said that surviving these types of incidents is not unprecedented. It's happened before. It will happen again. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if you took the situation with Daryl and Aaron in the car encircled by walkers.
Yeah.
Encircled by walkers, and you... And they started banging on the windows and the windows started to crack, right? Encircled fucking as far as the eye could see. Mm-hmm. And you made people wait 4 weeks. They'd be like, holy shit, how are they going to get out of that?
Yeah,
I don't
dead.
See
oh,
how they're
dead.
Getting out of that. I don't see. I mean, this is a lot. The Glenn thing is way more severe because you literally saw guts being ripped out of and they deliberately framed the shot to
yeah.
It was fuckery. They wanted to trick exactly. you. They chose to trick you in the Glenn thing. That's why it's a little bit different. But you know, if take any of these weird pickles the characters have been in, if you made people wait, you know, even when the walkers were closing in on the RV that Rick was in, people were like, oh my God, is he gonna be okay? And then he's home and you're like, oh, he's fine. He just ran away. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's not a big deal. I think this Glenn thing really benefited in the what they were trying to do and create buzz on it around this whole thing. But there have been some funny things that have happened. So without spoiling anything, there have been two other TV shows who almost feel like they're trolling The Walking Dead. And I think that that's great. First, Damon Lindelof, who was on the episode, the fuckery episode. He wrote this whole thing about a main character that appeared to die in his show, The Leftovers. It's hilarious.
Oh my God.
We'll have to link to it in the show notes. We'll have to link to David Lindelof's little thing in the show notes to show people for The Leftovers. And then, and hopefully people don't look at it, but a poster dropped today for the next season of Game of Thrones. And it was oh, okay. Right?
Yep.
And it's trying to, I think, just say, we're not going to engage in fuckery. Just so you know, everything's okay. That's kind of what they're saying with their poster. And I thought, this is so funny. This is all coming from like this Walking Dead stuff, you know? And I just think it's really funny. But anyway, I just was like, you know what? Glenn's alive. Fine. Great. He's alive.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. And then we get America's sweetheart, our first favorite character of The Walking Dead, greeting him right after he's gotten outside of the dumpster.
Yes.
So Enid.
Yeah. So here's how I think we'll tackle this. We'll just do Glenn and Enid, and then we'll do Alexandria. Okay?
Yeah. Perfect to me.
So instead of doing the cuts back and forth.
Fuck so, all it.
Heads up. Hey, heads up. I said heads up.
Oh, my God.
Right.
That was a way to start on the wrong foot. Instantly, like, hey, I just got fucking survived an entire horde of zombies and have been sleeping in the hot sun under a dumpster for 2 days. Sorry I wasn't on my fucking passing game for the fucking water bottle. What the fuck? How about you let me look at you after you say that?
What's up? Hell? Boosh, hits him in the head.
Yeah. Kills him somehow.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, no, again, this show and its teenage characters, they're the fucking thing grinding my gears.
You know what really grinds my gears? All right, so let's talk about this Glenn and Enid piece. Okay?
Oh, please.
There's not, I mean... that's beautiful.
I love saving my beers for just the right moment.
Yeah. Not only that, but you open them with artistry. You could say that unlike The Walking Dead, your timing was perfect. So let's just do this. Let's just talk about Glenn and Enid and what's going on here. And let's start with this bullshit. So there's a lot of buzz on the internet. A lot of people are really pissed off about Enid, right?
Of course. Of course. And now that's a funny line because I am annoyed in general with Enid and with Carl and Ron and essentially every non-adult character on the show. It's, for one, I think, tough for shows to write realistic dialogue between teenagers. It's always kind of hokey. It's always a bit silly. But her in particular, it's an interesting case. And I think she's going to get a lot more wrath because she's like a, I don't know what you would say, not a evil character yet, but she's kind of bordering, you know, she's not trustworthy. She's kind of still outside of everyone else. So that's immediately going to put her in everybody's, you know, suspicion radar. But
yes.
I don't know. Yeah, it's messy all around.
All right. So I started to really think about this. So a lot of the problems people are having with Enid is that she's annoying and, you know, and Glenn has this insistence on saving her. And
now that's on fucking Glenn. Damn it. Right.
She doesn't
want
to be saved and just let her leave. But here's the reality. She's, I don't know, between 14 and 16, not sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Young.
Look, officer, I thought she was 30.
She had a fake ID at the bar. I didn't know.
She said she wanted to go with me to watch the Patriots game tonight. What do you want me to do? I took her back to the place. No, but honestly, I thought... Enid's
I love that pause. That's like the idea of like the cop standing there in front of him, and he's like, "And I thought," and then he realizes he's fucked right there. Oh, yeah. Shit.
So look, Enid is being annoying, but is Enid being completely and utterly ridiculous as far as writing goes? She's what, 14 to 16? Her parents were consumed in front of her while she sat helplessly in a car.
Yeah.
She's kind of been wandering around, not sure if she's had much grieving time. She is a slayer of turtles, and now she finds her way to Alexandria where she kind of just feels off, right?
Yeah.
Next, she is out beyond the wall, can't fit in, feels weird, feels awkward, doesn't know what to do with herself, and she throws Glenn a bottle of water. She didn't throw Glenn a bottle of water, right, so she could then tell Glenn, "I don't want to be rescued." If she was serious, if she was seriously in a really dark place, she wouldn't be anywhere near Glenn. She wouldn't offer mm-hmm. him water. She wouldn't be anywhere in his presence.
If right? she had seen him, if she'd gotten a glimpse and noticed where he was, she probably would have just kept her head down and kept going.
She's a child, and yeah. she has, and she is, and I hate to use this term, but she's crying for help, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
She wants to be confronted. She wants to be saved, in a sense. She's not hanging around and letting him find her and throwing water and talking to her and responding to her and shit like that, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of the way I feel about it.
Yeah. No, and I can see that. And there is an element where she's not demanding anything of him. You know, she runs away from him. But like you're saying, it is still kind of a... It's kind of a show. It's kind of a put on in a way. Right. And, you know, she just doesn't know how to interact with anyone. And I think she might even be more naturally drawn to interacting with people like Glenn than the fact that they have experienced the outside world and the hardship of it. I think, you know, it was kind of glossed over in the earlier episodes with her interactions with people. But I think we were supposed to really, you know, I think it's important to keep in mind that she is a lot more similar to Rick's group than she is to the Alexandrians. You know, she got there first, she was found by them earlier, and has lived there longer, but she has seen the rough edges of the outside world a lot more and has lost a lot because of it. And that's why I think she was much more uncomfortable inside of Alexandria. So the idea of her running into one of Rick's group outside the walls, I can buy the fact that she would... Like you're saying, like not explicitly be like, "Oh, help me," but just be like, she might kind of find herself gravitating closer to them, tagging along, because these are people who can actually handle themselves. They have a little more, you know, experience in common, I would say.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think that she knows that the Alexandrians are a bunch of jabronis.
Yeah.
They're just shitty.
A bunch of pushover, can't get rights, just fucking take yeah. the lunch money out of their pockets.
They suck. I gotta get to them.
Suck the shitty.
They're just shitty, I guess. I don't know. We'll get to them. But, you know, so they're playing. Glenn and Enid have a raging battle of hide and seek, okay? Then Glenn goes and he sees none other than Mr. Husband,
oh,
who is
true.
Now
oh.
a walker.
I want to say one thing right before that, though. Right when Glenn leaves the dumpster, you know, she had already thrown the water bottle and runs off. He hops up into a window and goes inside that little house there. And I could not help but think, hey, what if you had seen that fucking window a day ago?
Indeed.
Come on. And I feel like there's even a slight pause. Like he kind of reaches in through the window and knocks some of the stuff out of the way, and he kind of pauses for a second. And I wonder if deep down that's when he goes, oh, we could have just done this. Shit. Whoops. Could have tried a little bit harder to look at our surroundings.
Yeah.
Oh, well. But yeah, then we get dead husband with his fucking eyeball attached to the fucking gate. Ugh, that was painful.
So Mr. Husband, now Walker, has his little note.
Mm-hmm.
The That's shittiest right. note of all time. I think it was, if you're reading this, I'm dead.
Yeah. Hey, if you see this, I'm dead and didn't make it. Bye.
A man a few words at Mr. Husband. Don't forget to walk the dog. Right? Sleep when you're tired.
Or walk, other... or eat the dog if you need to. It's all right.
Various other nuggets of wisdom. But he's dead, pressed against the fence. Glenn grabs the letter. Talk to me. What do you think? Yeah. What do you think? What do you like here?
Well, you know, we talked a lot.
Let me just say something real quick.
Sure.
I was watching this with the sub-host extraordinaire, right?
Mm-hmm. Who did a great fucking job last week stepping in for me.
Yeah.
Even though she said she beat me up to fucking be on there.
She not only did she beat you up, but she beat that episode up. And there were some super fans who were not happy with her.
But,
yeah. Yeah, they get all...
Jessica taking no prisoners.
They get all butt hurt sometimes.
I'm just a fence-riding bitch. Jessica knows what's up.
So, yeah, she was visibly in pain observing this. And I was just curious as to what your thoughts were on this. Like, what do you think?
I don't mind it. I mean, we talked about, you know, when the episode... Well, okay, actually, you know what? Before I get to how I feel in the way this relates to Glenn... Talk about some cold motherfuckers who couldn't put the guy out of his misery for one when he was being eaten alive and left him to become a walker. I'm like, I still love Michonne, but she went down like a micrometer in my respect for her. I'm like, God damn, you really couldn't have just poked him in the head with your sword and put him out of his misery and kept him from becoming a walker. No, he had to get his eyeball goop all wrapped around the cage and be a walker on the ground. God damn. That is some cold shit.
Well, don't you remember she was yelling, "Suffer, Whitey!" He was getting ripped apart.
You get what you deserve now, Whitey!
So you missed it, Matt. That's what happened.
That's true. I wasn't listening.
They had bad blood. Her and Mr. Husband had bad blood. But no, yeah, it was brutal. It was brutal that went down the way it went down.
Yeah. And as far as the connection to Glenn, like you brought up the interesting point that, you know, he kind of served as a surrogate for Glenn in that episode because we'd already seen Glenn fall down with Nicholas at that point, and we'd seen that, oh shit, he could be dead. It could already be over for him. And he served as this kind of, you know, sort of interesting parallel stand-in of like, I don't think I'm going to make it back. Like, he had the benefit of being able to come to terms with his fate before it actually happened, whereas I don't think Glenn had that opportunity. And so for Glenn to come across the note, there is some kind of, you know, there is some meaning to it of the idea of like, fuck, I was this close. It could have happened to me. And I think there's a lot of that in the show of guilt of whether it could have been you or not, where I think that is actually an interesting theme in the show still of the like exchangeability of lives of like, this could have been me. I could have been right here and anybody's lives could be swappable, you know, position wise. And you could make it or you could not make it, or you could be the guy who's saves everybody, or you could be the guy who fucks up and gets everybody killed. And it's just, you know, it's very easy for any of these mistakes to happen. So I kind of dig it. It's a little fucking sappy. I mean, to be real, but I mean, yeah, I don't mind it.
I'm thinking maybe you, the timeline was, is that it's the in that episode after all this shit is when Glenn falls down at the end of that episode. So that's what, and I didn't make that connection. That's what Lindelof said. He said it was kind of like a Trojan horse story. Like they were showing you, cause Glenn was in all the shots of him talking about his wife. And then at the end of the episode, come to find out everyone thinks Glenn's dying. So they took it as, you know, they were talking about on The Talking Dead, where he took it as it's kind of like this Trojan horse story where you think it's this guy the whole time. Come to find out, Glenn's the guy who's going to end up being fucked or whatever. But yeah.
Ah, but quickly unfucked through an act of fuckery.
Indeed. So, all right. Now, the battle rages on with these two because we have Glenn ends up grabbing Enid from behind when she's peeking out the thing. So he's like, tag, bitch, found ya.
Tag, you're it.
So Enid continues to tell Glenn that she's not going home. We're not friends. I'm not doing this for Maggie. She wouldn't want me to leave. I am doing the... Oh, we aren't friends, the girl tells him. And then he says, I'm not doing this for Maggie. She wouldn't want me to leave you behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, you're trying to be a good person. Maggie wants you to be a good person. You're fucking good people. Okay, wonderful. Also, they're not fucking here. Like, what? It's not like Maggie sent fucking instructions of like, and if you run into Enid out in the wild, she needs to come on home. You need to bring her home. Like, what are you? I don't know, Maggie. What are you fucking talking about, man? Make the judgment call yourself.
Real henpecked, I think. right? He pretends maybe. That he lives his life as if Maggie is like Sauron and the great eye just watches over him from Mount Doom, and like anything he does, he has to think, what would Maggie think in this moment?
Let me tell you something. The ring.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, dude. Maggie's gonna get real bored of that and end up fucking somebody else. Just say,
good old Papa Rick.
Gotta be yourself. Gotta be yourself, buddy.
Didn't watch enough Sesame Street growing up. Learn yeah. to be yourself.
So what do you think of Glenn's insistence on helping these people, these wayward boys and girls? Because that's kind of going on here, right? He's not taking no for an answer.
Yeah, essentially. And, you know, it's tough because it's similar to, you know, like Morgan's outlook. You know, he is taking the moral high road, which is, you know, never a bad thing in the sense of, you know, morality. But there's no looking at this situation and not seeing it as impractical and ridiculous as hell. Like, I mean, it's obviously, you know, when we see Enid moping around in this restaurant before Glenn comes up and grabs her, it's like, how much time has passed? How much time have you been outside of the dumpster just running around looking for her when you could have been getting home? You know, evidently she made it out here. She knows how to come, you know, between Alexandra and the outside world. She can go back and forth. I would have, you know, there's a part of me that's still looking at Glenn and Morgan too, but especially Glenn in this situation where I go, what a noble character. He's a good person. He's trying to do the right thing. Good for him. However, on a more rational, just practical side, it's like she can obviously handle herself to the extent that she can run around out here without just being instantly killed. Like, she can handle herself to that extent. You know what? I would rather find out how my wife is doing. I want to find out how the rest of the people I care about deeply are doing and how the situation is.
Right.
So it's a little weird.
I would have a hard time just walking away from the kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get that. And that's the thing. It's like, and there's a way where it's hard for me to even criticize it because it's like, I think morally, yeah, this is kind of the right call. But fuck, there's the more greedy part of me where I'm just like, you know what? She's okay. She's obviously been out here before. I'm headed back. I'm going home.
Right, right. Because there comes a time where she slips in and out of the Alexandrian grounds on her fucking Navajo path, mm-hmm. whatever she's doing, however she's getting in and out of there unseen. And it's just, there has to be a come to Jesus discussion with Enid. Like, listen, if you keep going out here, we can't continually go chasing after you. Right?
Yeah,
we can't keep running out here looking for you. But that being said, if I'm beyond the wall, as it were, and I'm out here with Enid and she's like, I'm not going anywhere. And I know that if she really felt that way, would she even be here? Wouldn't she be running away, constantly fighting with me? What? Why? I would try to reason with her, right? I don't know, and maybe that's the bad move. Maybe what you're saying plays into Glenn's feelings because he's like, I want to get home, so you're coming. This isn't a discussion because he's trying to make this thing a quick thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't
want
to fuck around. He wants to just get moving. But I understand where Glenn's coming from as far as you're coming home, you're not well, your parents were killed, you're kind of fucked up. I'm taking you home. Mm-hmm. But that can only go so far. I mean, are you going to club her on the head in hog tire and carry her home? I mean,
yeah.
That's why I think, you know, you have to, there has to be a, you have to try to reason with the girl somehow. And I don't know how you would do it here. I'm not sure.
Well, he kind of does it later on. You know, we have the miniature cliffhanger between commercial breaks of him or her pointing the gun at him. And then it comes back and he's like, you're not going to pull the trigger. And he's able to just essentially take it right out of her hand and say, all right, come on, like enough with this. And, you know, they end up walking together and they're on the road. And that's when he starts getting into the more heavier side of the discussion of like, you're just afraid. You've lost people. You want to just not care about anyone. And so that's right. Essentially what it is, you know, and that's why I think he still can't pull himself away from her and can't just let her run off out there by herself because he sees it as she it's not that she doesn't actually care about anyone, and it's not that she is afraid of these people or anything. She just wants to pull away so that she doesn't have to witness and experience death anymore from people that she kind of has at least some inkling to care about anymore.
Classic. Yeah, classic.
Yeah, it's just classic kid.
Classic behavior, you know, where I'm going to, I will, this is not only is it classic in life, but it's very tropey. It's, I'm going to cut myself off from relationships with people so I can insulate myself from the bad feelings that come when those people either A, disappoint me, or B, die. In The Walking Dead, it's B, die versus A, disappoint me. You know, it's not like a, it's not like a fucking rom-com where, you know, the dude's like, I ain't getting close to any of these bitches. I got hurt once. Fuck that. And he's just fucking all these chicks. Then this chick comes along. Like, I know the fucking story. And in this case, it's just a little different. It's you're isolating yourself from feeling. So when people fucking die on you, right, you don't have to endure the pain that comes with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's as old as humanity itself, right?
Mm-hmm. This
every time you open yourself up to love, you risk pain. And if you don't, then you can just kind of sit there in limbo, right?
Yeah, and especially with a kid. I mean, she is a child still. And, you know, she's only really experienced one massive monumental moment of pain, and that's all she has to compare any to. And so she's reluctant to let any further pain happen at all. Whereas somebody like Glenn or Rick or Michonne, they've experienced a lot of pain multiple times over a long period of time. And they're used to not only experiencing that pain, but coping with it and moving on, and then maybe still experiencing more pain and coping with it and moving on. So they understand that it's possible. Whereas for her, she's like, nope, it was so fucking nightmarish. I'm just never going to deal with it again. And I'm just going to run away from it. And that's that.
Right. And this is in a direct contrast to what we see from Ron when we get to Alexandria, but I'll just briefly mention it here. And that's, we're kind of witnessing a fight or flight situation from both of these people. Ron is going to fight, right?
Ugh,
he has a score to
like
settle.
Like a snake bitch.
Right. And she is kind of fleeing. She's kind of running from it all. And he's like, I will eliminate the source of my pain. And she's like, I will remove myself from the source of my pain. And that's kind of what we have going on here between the two characters. So there's a couple of moments. I actually, the gun on Glenn, I thought to myself, this would be amazing if this girl shot Glenn right now. Holy
oh,
shit.
Oh, man.
I for a split second, I was concerned.
Yeah, we were like, oh,
I was
shit,
expecting the fake
actually
out.
Yeah.
And then
that would have been ballsy.
Yeah. And then, you know, she gets real emo, asking about why and why we're saving people and why do you care? And when they're traveling, like you say, there's this moment where Enid stabs a walker in the head and Glenn kind of gets this real douchey, like, I don't know, almost like he just gets a real douchey look on her face.
He does. Yeah.
What the fuck is going on? Can you that's help me out here?
Oh, man. That's like, you know, the last episode where Sasha was preventing Abraham from killing walkers. And that had more of a practical context to it of like, why expend the effort? Why, you know, go out of your way? We should just, you know, keep our heads down. But there is still,
there was
funny.
There was a tactical decision on one of them, right? There was a tactical decision last week on the one that was far away. But the one in the room is just dumb to let live. But anyway. Yeah. That was her thing was similar, like, oh my God, you know,
how dare you? But it's funny how characters oscillate on this show about killing walkers. There's sometimes where it's like everybody seems to just go ahead and cut through them like butter and like, that's it. Let's just keep going. Kill all the ones you can. And then there's other times where people are like, did you have to kill that walker? And it's like, we killed like 40 today. Like, what do you care that I just killed another one?
It's very Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, this whole walker lives matter bullshit. Like, I don't understand it. Why are you gonna let a downed walker in the grass? Why? I don't understand why around your home you would allow a walker to stay animated. All you're risking is somebody to go trouncing through the grass, get grabbed and bit. Stop. It's why are people suddenly feeling this way? Is there a cure that they found that we don't know about?
We've hammered it home before. I got to hammer it again. If it's reasonable to take out a walker and you have the time and the chance to do it, then just do it. Like, lessening their numbers in any way is always a good thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It could be the difference in one. How many times has one walker fucked up people's plans?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, man. You know, that one extra walker gets you. Fuck.
That's it.
So she finds some balloons. She suggests I'm going to use these to distract them. And I'm like, okay.
There was something weird about that where I was like, that felt like an excuse on her part, where it's like, deep down, that's the child in her really coming out, just being like, I like balloons. Like, she's just not going to admit it. She's like trying to find some practical excuse to, you know, to make amends for it. It's just, I don't know. It's funny.
Do you think they broke Glenn's flair because they wanted him? Do you think that's just completely, that's just a writing device so he could have time with Enid before he signaled the group, right? I mean, it is, right?
I mean, essentially, yeah. And I mean, you know, to just pile it on to him, of course, once he's out of there, it's still not going to be any easier or whatever. But yeah, you know, that was one of our predictions that didn't come true, that he was going to come out of there with that flare gun.
Right, right. Well, because the way they ended up doing the episode. I mean, it broke when he fell. I can understand that. It breaks when he falls. Whatever. That's fine. I'm not going crazy about it, but it's awfully convenient, right? that he now has to spend time consoling Enid before they then find balloons they can signal the group with. You know, it's just, it's kind of by the numbers, and it was just a little like, all right, whatever, fine. So they find, 99 balloons, and they decide that they're going to fill them up with a helium canister that's nearby.
Yeah. Nice.
And I know that they had it because they were doing it to set up the walker train. So I don't discount that there are balloons and that there is helium. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So Glenn then starts to ask Enid some questions. Who did you stay with back home? So now he's doing what I was hoping he was going to do. Get this girl talking. Get her to start saying something. Try to form a relationship with her. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's very obvious. You know, even in that we got only, God, one or two glimpses of her with Ron, and who he claims, she's my girlfriend. But, right. You know, the glimpses we got of them together even were actually kind of interesting in retrospect, because they're not talking, and there's very much... We get, I'm trying to remember the shot exactly. I think it's when Carl sees them together and we see Ron like leaning onto her shoulder and kind of falling at her, and she's not talking to him, and she's just kind of like, she seems put upon. Like, she's like, I'm just kind of dealing with your shit. I don't really care. It seems like the only interaction she's had with that town, especially, you know, more so Ron, you know, the one person who has talked to her and been close to her, has been more of they're dumping their shit on her, and nobody's really asking her what's going on in her own mental life.
Right. So, you got to try to empower the kid and give her worth. Let her know that you need her. And that's kind of the approach I would have taken. You know, I might have said something like, look, I'm sick. I'm not feeling good. Thanks for the water, but I'm not feeling great. I need to get back to my wife. My wife's going to have a kid. You're smart.
That's true.
Can you help me? Help me get home, Enid. You know?
See, I think you're right. I think that would have been actually a really good approach for Glenn to take, to admit something personal like that to her. To be like, hey, you know what? The reason I was asking about how Maggie, my wife, is doing earlier is because she's pregnant. We have a kid coming. I love her. Can you help me get back to her? That is really important to me. Right. You know, it might ring a few bells that haven't been rung for her in a long time of like, oh, yeah, my family died, but other families are still alive and other people still love each other. And there are still the world, you know, she has that line of like, the world's just trying to die. We're supposed to just let it die. And he, you know, has the response of like, no, we're not. We were supposed to keep going.
Emo as fuck.
Emo as fuck. Hey, everybody, buy the Crow soundtrack coming out this fall.
Yeah, real emo. It can't rain all the time.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Can't rain all the time. Good God, we got to do that movie soon.
Oh, it's coming. Very soon.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, not only that, but I think she would have been like, Maybe her inner monologue goes, and you know, I can really put myself in a 14-year-old girl who's been traumatized head, right? And that's, hey, wow, this guy thinks I can help him get home. That's that's cool. You know, maybe I can help. Maybe just give her something like that. Even if it's bullshit, even if you're fine, even if you get home, no problem.
Exactly.
You empower the girl a little bit, mm-hmm. you know?
No, and I totally
agree.
That's
it, you know? And don't give fucking him. Judge her for stabbing a goddamn walker, dude.
Come
like,
on.
Jesus you, Christ.
You stabbed like 40 of them under the damn dumpster. What the hell?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's, I mean, I think that's really, that is it. That is the thing that she is missing, is the idea of something to live for. That something associated with people and other people who are living can give you a reason to live.
And, right. and not honor, by the way.
It's yeah, like and
you
not
honor
yeah.
the dead. What? What are you, a fucking Klingon? Stop.
Honor the dead.
Yeah. When your ancestors go to Stova Kor, you must honor them. Like, you know, I don't know if you're going to really get to her with that. How about you yeah. just, I don't know. Anyway, I just was like, you know what? Whatever. It's fine. I'm not, I know I'm being nitpicky here, but they're better than this is all I'm saying.
And now, so what is our next look in on them when they walk up to Alexandria?
Yes.
And they get a look in. You
and
know?
That's that. Mm. And then and she's, we see the.
She's doing
99, shuft, love, bala, whatever, go up at the end.
Doing her best attempt to be the house from Up. Her little fucking balloons.
Right on.
You can make it.
Speaking of emo as fuck, the beginning of that movie, Jesus.
Ooh, yeah. Good thing for 7-year-olds to enjoy.
Yeah. Hey, look, ladies and gentlemen, these 15 pages in this shitty little book on this huge planet represents your entire life. Yeah, it's a depressing fucking movie. But anyway, let's get to Alexandria.
Alexandra.
Yeah, let's get to Alexandra and talk a little bit about Alexandria. But you know what, Matthew? Before we do that, why don't we give these folks a quick message about a little thing we have called Patreon. What do you think?
Ooh, that sounds good to me.
You don't get much of an opportunity to talk about it, and I'm springing this on you live, so why don't you go ahead and tell the good people about it and all that jazz. Go ahead. Pitch the good people why they should consider supporting Patreon.
Oh, boy.
Us
well, that
Patreon.
It is the way, you know, much like I think the more, you know, people know about Kickstarter, the idea of throwing a few bucks towards a cause or an idea or a little handy invention to get it off the ground and get it going. Whereas Patreon is very similar, but it's a way to actually support something in an ongoing way. And we have a Patreon that you can support us in an ongoing way every month, giving us a few dollars to help us essentially expand and, you know, better the show. We're pushing towards getting eventually what video feeds, video shows,
yep.
more shows, more yep. hosting, more opportunities. It's a way to basically, you know, we can cover our costs and we can keep slowly pushing towards basically doing this for a full-time living and making our lives centered around giving you guys more content.
Dedicating our lives to entertaining the shit out of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan. And that's patreon.com/LSG Media. We will not belabor this point on a shorter episode. We talk about it a lot on the Science Fiction Film Podcast. But I know that there are some of you who listen to The Walking Dead and support us, and we shout everyone out on the Science Fiction Film Podcasts.
Because that's, right.
that's our biggest show. But we know some of you may have come to us through The Walking Dead, so thank you very much. For those of you who are Walking Dead listeners who support, I don't know what you listen to via Patreon. It's not that sophisticated, but we just figured we'd mention it here and say, hey, thank you very much. Help us keep the lights on and keep us going if you think we are worthy.
Definitely. Yeah.
Babushka.
Everybody.
So let's get to Alexandria.
Yes.
Dude, I got some problems.
Ooh, yeah.
I got a couple of issues. This is going to be a rare occasion for Dean.
Ooh, let me see. Let me hear.
I got a couple of problems with my main man, Rick, this week.
Oh, my God. Are you guys breaking up? Is it finally happening?
I wouldn't go that far because we got real deep history.
Real good sex life.
Yeah, real. Been down real deep together. So I don't know if we're going to... I don't know him. We definitely kissed on the mouth real deep, but no, we're
bristle on bristle.
Yeah, you know, no, we're not gonna break up. But I he annoyed me this weekend.
My parents were in town and his behavior was abhorrent, and I'm very upset with him at this moment. So,
oh my God,
we're not going to have sex for a few days, and I'm going to be very cross with him. No, he annoyed me. We're going to talk about it. So let's just jump right to Alexandria. Rick's probing the fence for weakness. I get it. And Morgan's probing the air with his staff. And Rick decides that he will talk to Morgan later. So time moves Rick ends up finding a crack in the wall. He then finds Maggie and he has a discussion with Maggie. You don't have to be up here so much, he says. And then she mentions if he sees a signal, it'll be from out there. And I kind of, is it me or is Maggie kind of like, she's kind of probing Rick for mating compatibility. Should a hubby not return, right? I don't know. Is that my imagination?
Or maybe just probing him for, I don't know, human emotion anymore. I feel like he's been such a fucking Terminator lately that she's like, you do still care about your baby, right?
She ends up sitting him down like Blade Runner, fucking breaks out the Void Comp machine.
He turns around and rips out Bill Pullman's heart.
She's just like, hey, a turtle is in the sand on its back. Starts asking him questions. And he fucking,
why is it on its back?
Freaks out. He's a replicant, goddammit. All right, so
when we go out there, it's never easy. It's never simple. It's always a fight. Yes.
It's always hard.
It's tough out there. I got real long vowel sounds. Okay, dude, we know, Ricky.
Ricky
we know,
boy.
Everybody knows. But then he says, we got to figure out a way to clear out the herd. She suggests they take their time and do it right. And then Maggie has an actual human conversation and says, hey, I saw Judith. She's starting to look like Lori. This is how people talk, not replicants. People talk like this. Hey,
not
how are
latex
you doing?
Faces.
Not like, hey, how you holding up, Maggie? What's going on? We're going to know soon about Glenn. Don't worry, we're going to get you through this. What do you see? What are your thoughts on helping us clear out these walkers? You know, distract these people. Be a fucking leader, dude.
Yeah, that's it.
Next. I hate myself right now. I punched myself in the face today.
Oh.
Punch myself. You piece of shit. Punch in the face, right?
Jessica's like, are you okay in there?
Punched myself in the face today as I wrote what I wrote down, which I will now share with all of you.
Oh, perfect.
Punched myself. I hate myself for this. Father McSweaty's putting up flyers for prayer time.
Oh, man.
And Rick walks by ripping them down. And I wrote to myself, hey, cool your jets, dickhead, about Rick. And then I punched myself repeatedly in the face as I realized I came to a conclusion that I'm sticking up for Father McSweaty over Rick.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Oh, and I got to tell you, my first, I basically had the opposite reaction. My first instinct was like, fuck you, McSweaty. You're going to have to go fucking waste another last 10 pieces of blank paper this place must have and a Sharpie
dude,
to fucking tell everybody.
You're like a fucking greaser from the 50s, like standing on the sidewalk while somebody gets bullied. You're like, you fucking hot on. That's what you get.
That's right? What you fucking like, get, loser. Watch me flick this butterfly knife around.
Yeah, that's you. You're just like, you're just pigpiling on McSweaty at this point.
But then it's like when I step back, I like that. Actually, you know what? Let me go ahead and say this too. This is the one line of dialogue from Carl that I like this episode where he goes, Dad, like.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not
down.
Get crazy.
Yeah.
Let's.
No.
The one line.
The one.
The
one. Only.
The single line. The single word. Three letters.
Dad. Come on, Dad.
Dad? Question mark.
He's, I know he's sweaty all the time, but cut him a break.
Yeah. Come on, Dad. Why is he that fucking guy, the Hanna-Barbera guy? Superhero-like even.
Oh my God, let's run.
So, dude.
But I
Rick,
do.
Let me tell you something. You're being kind of a bully.
Mm-hmm. And a quick way to lose Dean is if you bully people.
Right? And you see, I agree in the sense, and I feel like as silly as this scene kind of is, and how as much as I think it was hilarious to like take a dump on Father McSweaty, because I always think it's funny to take a dump on Father McSweaty, I think it's a good example of how Rick's leadership has devolved a little bit from being a leader to being, you know, more just, he's not inspiring morale. You know, he's very much just like, he's cutting everybody down and trying to focus in on the goal so hard that he's not caring about, you know, the spirit of the people and the effort that they're actually putting out and the toll that it's taking on them. And just, it's one of the, we've talked about this in previous episodes, like the idea that, you know, religion in this world can at glance be taken as like, well, that's silly. There's no fucking time for that. You just got to get your food and your guns and your supplies and just fucking be vigilant constantly. But there is another element of like, if that can help these people calm down and handle their emotional lives, then that is important. That is important to get these people's fucking heads straight, get them feeling okay, and then they can start paying attention to the more pragmatic aspects of all of this. And whereas I feel like Rick has just, you know, he's taken a very hard line of like, fuck it all. Nope. These people need to learn how to shoot guns and fight with machetes, and that's it. Fuck off. Nothing else matters. And that's on instinct. I understand it, but it's not the right path.
His leadership is sorely lacking this week. And it's problematic, dude. Ricky, buddy. Hey, unplug, brother. Chill out. Why don't you go
fuck Jesse for a while? Yes. Just take it easy.
Yep, take it easy. Get in there. Get balls deep, right?
Yeah.
You killed her husband, right? You're going real caveman. Mm-hmm. You killed her husband. You alienated her kids. Real good classic manipulation, right? Finish the fucking job and calm the fuck down, brother.
Yeah.
All right. I will apologize for him, but we'll get to that later. So here's my problem with it. Father McSweaty's a piece of shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted. Father McSweaty's a piece of shit, but he is a member of the community. Because you've accepted him for what he's done, or you haven't, but he's there. You haven't banished him. You're not going to hold a trial. You've moved on to other things. You can't stop him from having some kind of function in the community. It's not up to Rick to decide if he wants to post things that people might want to go to. It's not Rick's call to say, look, I don't care if he's like, you know, we're going to take our pants off and, you know, everyone's going to come by and we're going to smash our genitals into each other and that's how we're going to celebrate. Great. That's not Rick's call to decide what people can and can't do. That's where you're getting a little totalitarian.
Yeah, it's
true. I don't
like
that. If he wants to hang up flyers to do what he's going to do, people are going to go to him or they're not, and they're going to have to judge him for themselves. If you don't want him to be here doing what he's going to do, he's going to be totally useless and totally dead weight. He's just going to be a mouth that you feed. So banish him for his transgressions or don't.
Yeah.
But once you're over that, stay out of his way. You don't have to like him. You don't have to have a relationship with him. But what you can't do is show these two young guys that you're walking around with, that you're supposed to be an example for, to tear down his fucking stupid flyers. Love it or hate it, you're being a dick. You're being a bully, and you're setting a poor example that just states, hey, I don't like what he's doing, so I'm going to tear this thing down. Well, wait a second. We got a community here. We've got certain rules in place so we can have a cohesive, sort of harmonious, as much as we can group. And unless you're just going to kick everyone out, you might want to chill the fuck out for a second because your behavior sucks.
Yeah.
I admire McSweaty's stubbornness to put the fucking thing back up.
You know, that's I literally 100% agree with everything you've said, and especially even what you just said there of the fact that I was like, I kind of laughed at it. But the fact that he, you know, had the balls to just say, okay, Rick, whatever, I'm going to fucking keep going. I'm going to keep putting these up. I did admire that about them. That showed that he has grown at least somewhat of a spine as a character. And, you know, and that's it. It doesn't matter whether anybody in this town, if Father McSweaty is the last person who's religious there or not, doesn't really matter. The mm-hmm. fact that he can bring people together in a space where they can, you know, feel comfortable and safe and talk and get out, you know, this emotional shit that I'm sure is weighing on all of them, especially the Alexandrians who are, you know, this is their first dabble in real violence and losing people they care about. That's important. That's important to get that, you know, weight off of everybody so that they can really pay attention to what's going on. So, like, right. I agree. And I feel like Rick's being pretty rash here. As hilarious as it is for the dorky, sweaty nerd to get his books dumped, it's too much.
McSweaty is a treacherous man. He did bad things. He sucks.
He did wrong.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go to his service. I don't trust him. That's my decision to make, not Rick's.
Mm-hmm.
I decide, Rick, not you, fucker, right? You don't decide for me. I decide for me if I'm going to go to... If you are not part of my relationship with somebody else, that's where I have a problem with Rick. You stay out of my relationship with this person. It's my fucking business, not yours, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, that is kind of what I'm saying there. You know what I mean? Like, if you... His treachery, and when he's like, I don't trust Rick Shroop, they're this, they're that, you know, maybe he was fucking off his rocker a little bit, maybe he's losing his mind, you know, maybe he thought fucking Satan was walking among them, but there comes a time where you two guys need to sit the fuck down, and you need to say, I don't like you very much, but we're going to live together. We need to respect each other. We need to make this work.
And understand that you guys have separate roles. And it's like, I don't have to agree with your role, but your role is not getting in the way of mine. And it's fine for them to just coexist parallel, but totally separate.
Right. Absolutely. And when Rick shut him down make no mistake. When Rick shut him down in the meeting saying, I want to go, I have no problem with that because you have no business going. You can't help us, right? Didn't he just cut him off in the meeting?
I think so. Yeah. That's right. He was like, shut him down, but he just, no, next.
He's like, no, you can't do this, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe Deanna can find something for you to do, but you can't go with us to do this. You are a liability in the field. If he's a liability in the field, Rick, let him have his fucking church.
Yeah, that's
true. If he's sitting around doing nothing, he's going to start getting fucking crazy ideas.
Yeah.
If you take away the one fucking thing the guy has, he's going to cause havoc for your camp.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like he's a priest. It's all he knows. That's what he's trained in. That is his, no matter, even if he personally became an atheist, this is still the prism he has to view the world. That's all he's got. That's all he knows.
Bad decisions continue.
Are you speaking of Lord Spencer?
Dude, why are you teaching these people how to shoot guns?
Oh, Jesus, that too.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the next thing. Rick's bad decisions continue. He decides he's going to show Ron how to shoot a gun.
Jesus Christ, little fucking snake in the grass.
There's some problems here. Number one, his dad died... How long ago? Well, first, let me address Carl.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to talk about the most unbearable fucking dialogue.
Brutal.
On the show, maybe ever. I'm somebody who, I have not liked Carl, and then I've had times where I'm like, okay, I'm feeling for him. I'm trying to get on board. I'm trying to support him. Super thin ice at this point. I'm like borderline ready for him to be killed off the show. I mean, it is bad right now.
Brutal.
With the week before this, and then now it's just like, Jesus Christ, everything. Just shut up. Just shut up and let your dad fucking and talk and teach him. Like, what are you doing? Oh,
Carl,
God.
Listen to me. So, Carl is... First of all, Carl, you were shitting your pants 2 years ago, so stop.
Yeah, okay? So shut the fuck up.
Dude, I don't like Ron. I don't like Carl very much, but Carl, Carl's in my tribe, okay? I got to look out for Carl, right? Carl's behavior makes me more upset with Rick than Carl. Carl is acting like I think Carl might act. He's kind of being a dick. he's doing the, you're going to be scared. Trust me, I'm fucking cool. You're not. Like, I've known kids like this my whole life. Growing up, I knew that kid. Everybody's yeah. known this kid that you just want to grab by the back of the fucking head and ram their face into dog shit. And go, not so fucking badass hour now, you bitch.
Right? Oh, that's perfect.
So
yes.
I understand where Carl's coming from. Meaning, I know that he's being the, oh, you're going to be scared. You're going to do this. Yeah.
That's one of the
bro. So condescending.
Oh, the worst thing about that is when people in those kinds of situations were like, oh, this is a learning scenario. Someone's teaching, whatever. When people Christ. Are speaking up in that way, it just speaks to the endless fathom of shit that they don't know. Like everything that Carl said in that scene is everything he knows about guns. That's it. You are such a novice. You are so small. You are so inexperienced. You have the slightest, ever so slightest edge of experience and knowledge above Ron, and you are flexing it as hard as your little weak ass muscles can possibly flex. Like it's so glaringly clear and annoying. It's just like, dude, just let you. I would respect you so much more as a burgeoning man if you just sat there quietly and let your father fucking talk. Just shut the fuck up. Oh my God.
Question.
Terrible.
Approximately, Matthew, question.
Sure.
Approximately how old is Rick Grimes?
Ooh, Rick Grimes. I would
Hold
guess.
On. Let me give you a prompting question.
Okay.
Is Rick Grimes 15?
As far as I can tell, he's at least 16. Have to say.
Is Rick Grimes over 35?
I would have to say yes.
Okay. Hey, Rick. Step in here, buddy. Hey, Rick, you're a fucking grown-up. Step in here, buddy.
It would have been perfect if Carl had started his first line of like, yeah, you have to have the strength to wait for your right. And then quick, and Rick was just like, hey, Carl, I got this. Okay, thanks.
Right.
Like, right. I know what I'm talking about. You kind of know what you're talking about, but mostly shut the fuck up.
Hey, you're letting Carl run roughshod over a kid whose dad died 2 days ago.
That you fucking
shot. And then your son took his girl.
Oh, hey, shit. That is true.
Hey, not really sympathizing with Ron. I'm just saying. This is where some parenting and leadership would be real cool, right?
Why? Real beneficial.
Saying, dress the kid down in front of his fucking arch nemesis.
Yeah, in front of his Lex Luthor.
I would just say, hey, Carl, listen, he's going to get it. You know?
He's got it. I got
okay,
this.
Okay, okay, okay. Here's what I say. Carl, take a hike. And then I would talk to Carl in private later about why I booted him from the fucking range time.
That's true. That's a good right? idea. You say, hey, Carl, hey, can you grab us, you know, a handful of bullets? We're going to do some target practice. Let him walk away. Then you deal with Ron. And then later on say, hey, we don't need these fucking bullets. Let's fucking
hey,
talk.
Hey, Carl, go check on Judith. Do yeah. me a favor. Hey. Go check on Judith. Go check can on your you, sister for me. I'm going to talk to Ron.
How about you go breastfeed Judith, Carl? Can you just pop her nipple in her mouth?
Oh, Christ. And, hey, go check on Judith, 1-2, leave the hat.
Yeah. Hey, toss that on the ground where it fucking belongs now.
Yeah. Jesus. I think it's funny that he was wearing that hat and being a condescending little fucking prick.
Oh, Jesus.
But anyway.
Hard to watch.
Rick needs to step in here and defuse the situation. Is Rick so obtuse that he doesn't understand this dynamic?
Yeah, now that
does he not
I'll
understand
admit.
The dynamic between Ron and Carl and him, and he killed his dad, he's 15, he's probably not like cool, right?
Not cool with
not
it,
cool with this.
Not fully formed, not, you know, experiencing the political ramifications and understanding what all is going on.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And one, two, and we haven't even addressed this yet. Firearms? You're gonna give the kid a pistol. You're going to give the kid an automatic pistol.
Eesh.
Give him a fucking revolver, first of all. First of all, he should be going to RMC 101. Do you know what RMC 101 is?
Oh, I do not.
That is Rosita's Machete Class 101.
Let's start you on bladed weapons.
Go there where there are adults learning how to use a machete before they get into firearms.
You know
why
what?
Is he skipping the fucking machete class?
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Fucking A. That's 100% right. Why did you get to bump? Why did you get to bump up to 102 in weapons training? You right. need to be back in 101 with the fucking full grown adults.
It's bad circumstances. It's too soon. They shouldn't be teaching this kid how to shoot. I don't think anyone disagrees with this.
And I feel, you know what? I feel like there's probably just a little bit of useless guilt hanging around Rick in this situation because he had to deal with Ron out in the woods when him and Morgan were out there burying his fucking piece of shit dad. And the fact that Ron straight up flat out asked him, hey, I want to learn how to shoot. So I feel like he's giving him a little more leeway, right? As I feel like there are other even adult Alexandrians who, if they were like, can I learn how to shoot? He'd be like, fuck off. Go learn from Rosita how to use a machete. And then maybe you can learn how to use a
yes.
gun. Whereas I feel like there's just some guilt letting him, you know, do this shit with Ron.
Hey, I got an idea. How about this? You want to shoot? You want to take care of yourself? You got a sinewy, you got that sinewy puberty strength going on right now, right? I get it.
That boner strength. Your fucking blood's half sperm.
Yeah, despite the fact that you have the constitution of Doc Holliday, that aside, how about you go see Michonne?
Yeah.
Bond up with Michonne a little. She's going to show you the blade. Sell it to the kid. Hey, Ron, here's what I think. I think you should learn how to use a machete. Here's why. Right?
Yeah. There you go.
Figure it out. It's a great weapon. It never runs out of ammo. It doesn't jam. If you limp wrist an automatic, if you're afraid, it could jam. The fucking blowback, you let the fucking gun come back, it could jam. At worst case, you teach him how to use shoot with a revolver. He's totally clueless, never had a gun in his life. And now you're saying carry around an automatic?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here, Rick. What are you doing? You're being a moron this
And I mean,
week.
Come on. It's got to be so easy to sell. Like, hey, look at Michonne. Look at the fucking shit she can do with that thing. Don't you want to be able to do that? Go hang out with her. Fuck off.
Yes. Two, don't, like, do you, does Rick not think, like, maybe distance between me and this kid, kind of like his mother suggested, might be a good idea right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I'd love to teach you a gun, but let me tell you, man, why don't you start here, get this down, and then we'll definitely shoot. Maybe even say, we'll go pop off a few rounds, man. Absolutely. Definitely. We're going to go down. We're going to pop off a few rounds. Me and you. Carl's going to stay behind because he's being a real dick.
Being
just
a
you
super
and me.
Dick.
Just me and you. We're going to go out. We're going to pop off a few rounds. We'll bond a little. I'm not going to give you a fucking gun to walk around with no bullets because you know that's just a shit show waiting to happen.
Yeah.
You don't think he's going to fucking find bullets somewhere. And two, do you think he's going to grab the right ones? The chances of him going in there and grabbing a fucking 40 cal round when it's a 9mm and blowing the gun up in his hand is a possibility.
Seriously.
He doesn't know what to put in the goddamn gun.
Damn, these bullets fit kind of loose in the magazine. They're kind of jangling around. Nah, that's all right. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Let's see how it works.
Kaplow. My eyes get blown out. Great.
I don't have a thumb anymore. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Hey, take in your family, Jesse, one fucking piece of flesh at a time. So, I don't know. Look, I know I'm being a dick. And people are going to say, whoa, you're so fucking down with Carol's knife fighting seminar. You were so down with arming the people. Why are you changing your fucking mind? I don't know why this guy talks like this.
That's our only 78-year-old fan.
Why do you not let the people learn? You filthy cunts. Up's a great movie.
It reminds me when my wife fucking died.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus.
Anyway, so look, let me explain myself. Carol was teaching people how to handle knives, number one. She wasn't teaching people
children
whose parents she murdered. Self-defense, no, murder. Whose parents she murdered, right?
Yep.
How to use guns. She was teaching these younger people, young kids, how to use knives, how to defend themselves. The circumstances were they had some relatively downtime. It wasn't like your dad died 3 days ago. We have a shit show, all these kinds of emergencies, Glenn missing, and now there's walkers at the wall. Hey, let's go down the range, pop off a few.
Yeah.
Right? The circumstances were a lot different. That's why I was down with Carol doing it when she did. I'm still down with arming the people. Rosita's training thing, I like. We're going to talk about that. I like the fact that she's saying, here's what you got to do. You got to figure this out. Because
let's hop to that scene because that is a weird, It's an interesting scene because, for one, like you're saying, I totally agree. As far as Rosita's concerned, I'm like, hell yeah, this is what I want to fucking
can
see.
Can I say one more thing about,
oh, sure,
about the Rick thing before we run from that? Couple things, dude. Teach people how to keep their muzzle downrange first, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
always
right.
Don't point this at anything you don't want to die. That's the first thing you tell the kid, okay?
Yep.
Keep your fucking muzzle downrange, dude. All right, I'm done. I'm off my soapbox.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, as far as Rosita's concerned, I like her character more and more. I remember when she was first introduced in the show, I was very much like, eh, whatever. Seems very one note. Not much going on here. I don't see her living very long. They have surprisingly developed her pretty interestingly. And I like her taking this stand and teaching everybody. I know Jessica's going to fucking hate to hear this. I'm kind of back to being like, hey, Eugene, why don't you go fucking die somewhere? Like, you're being pretty sweaty and useless again. What is this fucking garbage? I don't like this up and down spikes and then valleys of bravery with him. Like, how about you grow a pair and not lose it the next fucking day? I don't know what to say about him anymore. It's just so weird.
Yeah, so I don't know. I like that Rosita is saying, listen, here's how not to get your machete stuck in bone, okay?
Yeah.
And then, can we talk about the Alexandrians before we get to Eugene?
Sure.
Dude,
sure.
It looks like you took people who were 37 days into Survivor and only eating rice and water, no energy, and they were just like, swinging, it's like they can barely lift the fucking machete, dude. It was brutal to watch. They're grown-ups. They all their shitty faces are just telling me that we are want to be dead. They're basically walkers that don't attack you.
Living is too exhausting. We'd all rather die.
Yes, yes. Bend the fucking knees. Crouch a little, right? Square up, right? Get the fucking machete. Swing that fucker with some like you got
some
a heartbeat.
Gusto.
Do something, dude. They're like,
If I hold the machete and yell at the walker, will that make him go away?
Dude, have you ever held a machete? Have you ever given a machete to an adult and watched them go, fucking cool, right? And say like, like, and now we'll get to Eugene. Oh, it's just dangerous.
Yeah, dude, Eugene was like the pinnacle of uselessness in this scene. It was just like, what the fuck are you I've seen you use guns. I've seen you take
not
out walkers
well,
at this point.
But yes.
Not,
yes.
Yeah, not like super proficiently, but you got it done. And in this, he was like, don't make a sound behind me. I might shit my pants and hurt myself.
Right.
What?
I like Rosita's message. Dying is easy. It stops. The people around you dying, that's the hard part. That's the words to live by, dude. Pay attention to that. Your behavior, forget about you. You're dead already. How about you just save the people around you, right?
I love it. That's the thing. Like, this is one of those scenes where I'm like, shit, I do really like Rosita these days. She has really grown. She gets it. She's a character who gets it. And
but man, those people, it's like, guys, come on.
Seriously.
Son of a bitch.
They were all wishing they had just signed up for the fucking yoga class at the YMCA instead.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. Like, I wish I would just practice stretching and farting instead of this.
You don't think when Eugene grabs that machete, he's going to be transported back to his fucking WoW playing days and feel like, all right, cool, man. This is like when I played WoW. You know, like,
I'm going to raid a dungeon with this.
Man. Yeah. I don't know. But I was just like, are they all going to just be like, oh, well, whatever.
Yeah.
We just suck.
Give us some slack. We're all just shitty.
Yeah, it's brutal.
So shitty.
So we jumped to that, but let's go back to, meanwhile, Morgan making medical inquiries for his wolf pup.
That's right. And he's very obviously instantly unsure and guilty about
for
this
sure.
whole
he's
proposition.
He's being deceptive.
Yeah. I liked the way that first, you know, introductory scene of this, you know, little subplot started, where he walked up to Denise's door and then immediately had second thoughts and was like, ah, fuck it, and was walking away. And she kind of caught him and, you know, caught him off guard. He wasn't ready to speak to her at that point. And I like that. And I think it's interesting. And again, this is all, I think Morgan is maybe the best example on the show at this point of being very consistent to his character. You know, he's struggling with keeping his, you know, yes, this moral high ground that he has kept from Eastman, but he has kept it so far, and he's having a hard time keeping it. And I like that about him. He's right. Not a character who has simply dogmatically stuck with it and just been like, well, this is what I do, and I don't question it. He has stuck with it, but he's having a hard time sticking with it. And I find that really interesting. Yeah.
Me too. Before we get to the them interrupting him and saying, hey, we need to talk, and then it's Carol, Rick, and Morgan, and Michonne, and they're all sitting around.
That's right.
Let's just talk about, hey, Morgan. Dude, question for you, buddy. Have a seat. You decided that you were going to keep this guy hidden from us because he's hiding him.
Yeah.
He doesn't want people to know he's got this guy chained up. And then in the morning, he was doing his fucking staff kata. Right? While this guy's sitting there, like, what are you just killing time waiting for your move to go to the place? I don't know. What is his plan to rehabilitate this guy in secret and then present him as a changed man to the group? You know they're going to find out.
Yeah. And that's why I was
just
wondering.
Just be out with it.
You know, and I get why he's not coming out with it. I get the idea. Because, and
he's concerned they're going to just kill him, right?
Oh, yeah. And like, especially the last glimpse we get where Carol, you know, walks up to the door and she's like, who the fuck are you keeping in there? I could literally imagine.
Her words exactly.
Yeah. Basically, if AMC were HBO, that's what the fucking dialogue would have been. Who the fuck is in that cell? But I like that essentially, well, I mean, for one, you know, if Carol had walked in there, I imagine that the moment she saw a W on his head, she would literally whip out a gun and blow his fucking brains out and without even hesitation be like, why the hell did you keep him here? Why were you keeping him alive? And so I get that, you know, that is basically why, you know, Morgan hasn't told them. He essentially knows that, like, they're not going to put up with this. They are going to fucking kill your ass pronto. That's what's going to happen. So I get it. But I do, yeah, and I'm with you of wondering what's his end game. Like, what are you hoping to happen from this? You're not going to let this guy go. If you do, fuck you. But, you know, is he hoping to rehabilitate him? Is he hoping to talk to him and gain some information? And then, you know, there was a part of me wondering if he was like, all right, I'm going to figure out from him where the wolves are, what the base camp is, what their thing, their situation is. And then that's when he would come to Rick and say, hey, Rick, by the way, I haven't told you because I know you would just off him, but I have a wolf and he has information for you. Let's go talk to him instead of just executing him. So that's kind of what I was thinking he was going with this, but I'm not sure. And at this point, with, you know, with how this episode ends, I don't think any of that shit matters anymore. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, man. Your guess is as good as mine. So let's talk about the inquest.
Sure.
So Rick's like, you know, talking about how he almost killed me. And Morgan's like, yep, I let him go. He outs with it.
And I respected that about him, that he was just like, yeah, you're right. That's what
I
did.
Real quick, Carol, you got to watch yourself.
Ooh.
You can't yell they burn people alive.
Yeah. You of all people.
You're not allowed.
You've got too much history there.
You're not allowed to say those words, Carol.
But
anyway, Morgan asks Rick why he didn't kill him. And, you know, he's like, I stabbed you. Why didn't you kill me? And Rick's like, because I knew who you were. I don't know if this is a really good case for Morgan. He did know him. He's not a stranger with a W who hacked up all his friends. I mean, this is a little different, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like that's a tough argument to pull off as far as Morgan's side of it.
But like you pointed out, I like Morgan's struggle.
Yeah.
This is good shit. This is really good shit here. I think that this is good acting.
Acting.
I think Lenny James does some good stuff here by saying, you know, you let me live, then I help Darren and Daryl. If they died, maybe the wolves don't even come here. Suggesting that I don't even know it's right. Maybe if I didn't get involved with that and they died, then the wolves would never have come here anyway. You know, like, because then, I don't know, like, he's having all these crazy thoughts.
Yeah.
he goes out, he goes on about how all life is precious, and he's wrestling with the philosophy. He admits to that, which I like. And yeah. then he asks, do you think I belong here? Good question. Right?
Yeah, that seems like something, you know, it's interesting in this scene that they're all sitting around like this, because this is kind of mimicking the prison council. You know, this is Rick and yes. Carol and Michonne. These are all council members. You know, evidently Rick stepped down, you know, by the time we see it. But this is, you know, the decision-making body that they're used to having. And Morgan is somebody that they respect and I think trust in a lot of ways, but they are very uncertain about, you know, this pacifist principle of his, which I think yeah. Rick is the only one who has really gotten to hear that directly from him before this scene. I think this is relatively new information to everybody else. Like Carol was very surprised to see him not killing people when it was going down, and especially Michonne, this is totally new. Whereas Rick, you know, they had some personal conversations about he thinks all life is precious. I'm not going to kill anyone. That's just how he is now. And so, yeah, there was an interesting element of it just being new information, at least to Michonne. And Michonne seemed to be the one taking it the most easy on him as well.
Yeah, but she did. She asked questions that I thought were very good questions to ask. And that's,
yeah.
Yeah, that's good words. Super. Like your words, but how does that play out practically?
Yeah.
You know, with practicality. And that's what I want to see here. I think you can say all life is precious and you can just adhere to this dogmatic principle because some guy took mercy on you in the fucking woods who had a total different set of circumstances and he broke you out of your bullshit. And now you're like this zealot for this idea that all life is precious. I don't know if it is.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But, dude, you're putting yourself, if all life is precious, then stop jeopardizing people's lives, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's,
it's a little tricky. It's a little tricky.
And he doesn't say anything explicitly in that way, but I feel like, cause he talks about, he's like, I believe all life is precious and I still do. I've thought about giving up that belief, but I can't. And I feel like that's probably, you know, that is what he's thinking of, is where he basically formed, you know, before this philosophy, he was on his own. He was alone. He had already lost his son, his child, and, you know, totally alone. And then he met Eastman and then he got this philosophy. And after getting that philosophy, he was on his own again, totally alone for all this time. We've kind of talked about that. Sure. And now this philosophy is having a hard time living in a society of other people. And I think that's what's really going to force it to change or not, because it's easy to say all life's precious and I won't hurt anyone. I'll even risk getting myself hurt for the sake of preserving this pure philosophy in, you know, out in the wild. Easy to say when there's not a teenager and a baby and other people living in this community where it's like, if I choose not to kill some of these people, they're going to die. That's a direct result of my choices to not take another person's life. And I think, yeah, this is where he's having a really hard time now since moving into a community of other people and having to live in that.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's you know, we've talked a lot about Morgan's philosophy in the past, and I don't want to beat a dead horse too much, but I'm looking forward to how the group questions him on this further. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to this. Yeah. Although I don't think we're going to have much time for them to sit down and have chats based on the way this episode concludes.
For sure.
So meanwhile, the church tower begins to crack and break.
Yeah.
Rick and Michonne try to plan a way to get the walkers away from the walls. They're chit-chatting. Rick says that this is more bad stuff by Rick. I just want our group on this, he says. And she's like, really? Question mark?
Yeah.
Really? Question mark, right?
I do like how forcefully she kind of questions. You know, that's part of why I like Michonne, especially so much at this point. She is one of the few, you know, handful, maybe even less than that, characters who can really stare Rick right in the face and say, you're doing something fucking stupid right now, or you're yes. saying something shitty right now. And he'll take it from her. Like, yes. She's one of the few people he will look at and be like, you're right. Like, he takes advice from her. He takes her, right. her opinions and her criticism. That's why fucking love her so much, and that's why they need to get fucking married, goddammit. I'm so tired of any of this bullshit.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, listen.
Yeah.
Here's what I think. I think that Rick... So here's why Rick's not a sociopath, because he listens to her.
Yeah, there you go. I agree.
He apologizes when he's really wrong, right? He doesn't do it often, but He actually does it in this episode, which we're going to talk about. But anyway, Deanna shows up, and Rick's almost annoyed with her fucking plans. And she's like, no, no, we're going to do this after. Alexandria will endure, right?
Yeah. And that's, so that was an interesting moment because for as much as I roll my eyes a little bit of like, come on, really? Like, this is what you're thinking about right now? This just further pounds into the ground how out of touch you are as Alexandrians. And like, you know, the present situation is, you know, definitely what matters. But it is true, the idea of it, like, you can't, what's the point of even fighting in the present if you have nothing in the future you're fighting for, you know?
Yes.
So I get it. You know, it does make sense. And I still like Deanna. I know everybody's like, fucking Deanna and her haggard, weird face. But I do like her.
She came out of it, though.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, you got to give it to her. She's a widow. She's lost a son. And she fucking God, Irish knifed a zombie to the ground. she's fucking made her way. You got to give her a little credit.
That's right. So, back, oh, I'm sorry, I wrote back in Alexander because of the way this episode went. Anyway, the church starts to pitch and pop and crack, and no notices.
On my second viewing of this, it was really noticeable how ominous that fucking tower is throughout the entire episode.
Yeah.
Really, I actually really enjoyed those look-ins at it.
Rick starts reinforcing the other walls with the help of Tobin. Tobin comes up with this idea of building a brace. This scene is just sort of Rick interacting with Alexandrians.
Yes.
And maybe coming to realize they're not fucking useless. Because Tobin comes up with this idea how to brace the wall. Rick's just nailing reinforcers on it. And he's like, well, wait a second. What if we do this? And that's when he basically says, look, man, things move slow here. Then they started moving fast, too fast. But don't give up on us, right?
Yeah.
He's pleading with Rick, understand where we are in this position that we're in. And he admits to having been afraid of Rick back in the day when he had the beard and, you know, how you saw things that we couldn't and et cetera, et cetera. So Tobin's continuing to be a pretty decent fellow.
Yeah, I've always liked Tobin. Tobin's been pretty damn good. I like that guy. And it's right. And I'm glad to hear those words coming from an Alexandrian because we've had some similar dialogue from other people in Rick's crew saying, you know, give him a chance. They need to learn. They haven't seen it. But I think it's important that Rick firsthand got the experience of hearing that from somebody of like, look, we're trying. You know, I can admit that we don't know and we're not totally ready, but we are trying and we're with you. And I think that's, you know, an important moment for Rick.
Meanwhile, Ron's stealing bullets, and then we have to talk about the 1960s Adam West Batman bullshit. What the fuck is Spencer doing?
Fucking what an asshole in this scene. What, you know, I don't want to jump to our listener comments yet, but somebody does point out he must have been drunk on cheap vodka, and I totally agree. Man. He's just like, you just got hammered and threw a fucking hook over the wall and was like, all right, let's fucking do this. Oh, what an asshole. What the fuck? Hey,
thanks for putting your 200-pound, well-sculpted ass on that fucking high wire. By the way, come on. So he stood there, twirled his grappling hook in line, threw it across like fucking Batman, no shit, and then decided he was going to scale across it?
Yeah.
Good golly, Miss Molly.
Yes.
He's putting strain on the walls and shit, and I'm just like, let that dummy fall. Like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
So,
oh my God.
Tara comes to his rescue.
Absolutely. Fuck. He would have been totally done without that fucking gunfire cover.
Great shooting. All headshots, one-handed. Not
damn
bad.
Straight. Damn fucking straight. She has really fucking aced it.
Spending a lot of time on the range.
Damn so, straight.
Now, enter the worst line Rick has uttered in a long time.
Ooh.
Tara, you almost died for one of these people. What the hell are you doing?
And she has the most genuine, best response that this show has ever given to Rick. No solemn facial expression, no confusion, just a fuck you, dude. I was trying. I was just doing my job.
The middle finger.
Just fuck you. A nice bird. It's perfect.
It's what I think Rick needed to see a bird this week, and I'm glad he did.
damn straight. And me and you both, we are people who love Rick. We'll always love Rick. And I think we've both, you know, really grown to like Tara at this point. But I expect she has maybe entered the pantheon of I really fucking like this character now. So good.
I thought she might bite it, man, when she was getting cute with the fence shenanigans.
Yeah, that's right. That was a little close.
She's not the most lithe and athletic girl in the world, you know? She might take a little tumble here. Anyway.
It's good stuff, though.
I'm not saying I'd throw her out of bed, but I'm just saying. Absolutely. So later, Morgan goes to see Denise. But, oh, you get an idea. You come to me.
Come to me. You come to Coral.
Fuck. And I, it's interesting in that scene, Spencer does make the point of, would you have even listened to me? Like, would you have given me a shot? And I think it's an interesting opposite. Tobin is somebody who's kind of coming clean and becoming very open with Rick of saying, look, we were scared of you. We were scared of you guys. You are a total, you know, a separate creature from what we are. And we weren't used to dealing with people like you. And we're trying to get used to it. We're trying to adapt. Whereas, Spencer is kind of the opposite side of like, look, I want to help too. I have my own way of thinking I want to help, but I know you're not even going to give it any credit. You're not going to listen. You're not going to pay attention. So if they're going to do something, you just need to do it on our own. It just shows that divide between the Alexandrians
and
Rick's
group. It does show a divide. So there's two sides to that coin. On the one side of that coin, I would say, hey, Spencer, how old are you? Like 43? Why are you acting out?
Yeah.
Just come talk to me like a grown-up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on that same side of that coin, I would also say, hey, remember when you told Morgan you were going to just hang out outside in the bushes while we fought the wolves because you were afraid? Remember that? Right?
Yep.
Maybe that's why we don't want you doing your fucking high-wire Barnum and Bailey's bullshit.
Yeah, that's
And then
it.
On the other side of that coin, there's, hey, Rick's pretty much unapproachable, thinks we're all giant pieces of shit. He's kind of right. And why would I go to him with an idea? First of all, hey, Rick, you're not the boss of me, buddy.
That is true.
If I want to climb the fence and go die, fuck you. I'm climbing the fence and I'm going to die.
Yeah.
This isn't there's no dictatorships here, Rick. That's not how this works. Okay.
That's right.
Right. You might have a problem with me taking good supplies. Right. I can understand your interest in that. But my life is my life, not Rick's life. Rick doesn't own my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he does stupid shit in the middle of the daytime that causes other people to maybe lose their lives for trying to save him, now you're Rick's problem, right?
Exactly.
So I get it. I'm just saying there's a lot of different facets to this going on here.
Oh, yeah.
So later, Morgan goes to see Denise.
That's cute banter.
They talk about cheat sheets. And that's when he has to dress a wound that's not his. And then we cut to Carol dropping Judith off at the sitters. Giving fucking Sam a little pep talk about monsters.
Oh, I gotta say, real quick, I loved the aesthetic of how, fucking vigilant Carol is, because she's watching Morgan leave and then Denise leave, and it's Carol sitting out on the porch with a baby in her arms, and she's got her little fucking cardigan on still. She's still looking real cute, and it's one of those things. I love how far we've come with this character, how she is absolutely the fucking eyes of, Rick and everybody else. And she absolutely still can sell that she is the most humble of housewives. It's
so
perfect.
Yeah, is she though? Isn't that charade over when she basically went Assassin's Creed?
No, that's the thing. It is. That has ended. I think everybody's aware of what she's capable of. But when you see her just sitting on the porch, cradling baby Judith, it's one of the things where you're like, fuck, you could still look at her and not expect that she is just 100% as aware as she is. And I love also that added aspect to, even some of our listeners have pointed out the dynamic between Carol and Morgan of the fact that she's the one who's really on to him, especially. She's the one who catches him. She's the one who's keeping an eye on where he's going, what he's doing, who he's talking to, all those things. I love her in this. I just love Carol. I just absolutely, totally on board the Carol train.
Right. Because Morgan is potentially a liability. Now, you could argue he beat up a lot of those wolves.
Yeah.
Morgan probably single-handedly saved many lives.
Yeah.
Right?
And I love me some Morgan. I'm still totally on board with Morgan, too.
But harboring a wolf is a problem, and I think Carol's smart to confront him about it.
Yep, I agree.
Which is exactly what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
After she gives probably not great advice by saying the only thing that keeps you from becoming a monster is killing. Not really sure. Not sure if that's okay. Sound advice for us.
I would recommend starting out with small animals. Torture squirrels. Maybe kill a dog. Yeesh. You know, you don't want to become a monster.
Yeesh. So Carol confronts Morgan. We get this sort of like lining up of conclusions, right? We get this whole big setup like you think is going to be a thing, and then they crush us. But so it goes like this. Carol confronts Morgan. Ron's getting all fucking boys in the hood on Carl.
You menace to society.
Yeah, fucking walking up on him, right?
Oh, Jesus, that's right.
Then you got Michonne looking over the plans. Tara looking for Denise. Interesting. Rick apologizing to Tara. Good on you, Rick.
Yeah, I totally am glad you brought that up. But like, that was a moment in this episode where I feel like Rick is apologizing for his, you know, lack of leadership and his lack of just, even if he really did have a personal problem with the way she behaved and the fact that she was risking herself for an Alexandrian, that's some shit for private. You shouting this shit across him right there, that's all just adding to this problem of morale and this problem of unity. You know, you can't expect them to rally behind you when you're like, these fucking people don't risk shit for them. It's like, well, yeah man, hey, you've already... You've divided yourself from them. You've already made it that way.
Right. How can you use the words, why are you risking your life for them? For these people?
These people. Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck are you talking about, dude?
Dude, this isn't the successful PR campaign that you want to be running.
This is terrible leadership. Real bad. And... Is Rick an alien? Is he from another world where they have ray guns? Like, Perhaps. Why is he so bizarre? He looks at her like the fucking primitive man looked at fire. Hunched
like,
over, like scratching what his head when he realizes, when she says, he's like, what do you mean you didn't think about it? You mean you just reacted? Like, scratch my head. Ooh, fire burns. Owie. What can I do with that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, and she, you know, she didn't say it in these blunt of terms, but it was like, yeah, it was a human life at risk, and I could do something about it, so I did. And that's that. And, you know, there's still some weird divide that's like partition in Rick's head where he's like, well, there's us, and there's Alexandrians, and the idea that you would even just thoughtlessly help an Alexandrian is just absurd. And it's like, no, man, it's just another person.
But they're ants, Tara. Do you know how many ants there are? It only lived 3 days. Why are you risking it for ants? Like, that's what I mean. Is he an alien? Does he not, like, how many times has Rick not thought and reacted to save a life? Many times.
Oh, yeah.
Many times. Why is he pretending he doesn't get it? Does not compute.
Does not. Why must one risk self for human?
Rick really disappointed me this week.
Yeah. There's a little problem there.
Deanna thanks Rick, and he's like, at least he's still not a sociopath. He's like, thank Tara.
Yeah.
What Spencer did was stupid. I agree with Rick telling her that. And he's like, you need to talk to him, because that's when he's like, when the walkers went for him, they made a gap. Rick mentions the 9 things he could have done rather than save Spencer. But then Rick tries to convince her that she saved Spencer because of his relationship with her. And that's when Deanna's like, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
you saved
loved
him
that.
Because you valued his life, and that's what I mean. Like, does he not realize he just did the same thing Tara did with Spencer? Like, he reacted too.
Yep.
He was being a person, a human being.
Exactly.
Human beings do.
I loved that. I love when she was like, "That's the wrong answer," because you know he keeps trying to. And he did the same thing with Morgan earlier in the episode. He's like, "No, I only didn't kill you because you are you. You are Morgan, and we have a personal history." And that's also equally not true. You know, because it has a little more truth of Morgan, but still the same principle holds of like, you were fighting to save a human life, period. That's what it is. Like, you yes. still, whether you want to accept it or not, you have some unconscious value placed on human life, as much as you might not consciously actually accept that. That's what it is. And, right. you know, I like, again, this is one of those times where, as much as we can all dump on Deanna and how, you know, crazy she's been and silly and wandering around, we can do all that. But she has a real fucking good eye for reading people, and she can yes. see right through Rick. And I love that about her. And I still, that's why I really hope she doesn't get offed. You know, I want this character to kind of keep being around. And there's some interesting aspects to her that I still really, really like.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, we get the balloons flying free. Fucking Maggie comes running.
That's right. Glenn. That's yeah. Glenn.
That's Glenn. His and I mean, favorite balloon is the green balloon.
The green ones. And as much as I'm totally making fun of her because it's kind of funny.
I know.
I fucking like it. Okay, call me a romantic. Yeah, I cried. I only cried for a half hour after I watched this, okay?
But can no. Maggie do something? Like, is she going to just stand on the wall? Like
there's balloons!
Right? Like a goddamn dog waiting for you to come home at 5 o'clock. Can't she be like, all right, I'm going to, you know, there's some grass to cut. There's a couple bodies to bury. Like, fucking do shit. Don't just stand on the wall all yeah. forlorn and shit.
on your anyway, widow's peak.
Kabloosh. Down comes the
wall. Oh, my God. This... I gotta say, man, I don't know about you, this fucking got me. My first viewing, at least, I was not expecting that. I did not see, even all the ominous shots of the, you know, boards dropping off of this building and the cracks splitting a little more in it and wavering, all of that, I still, that peaceful music at the end, seeing the balloons, everybody stands up to see, and then that fucking tower just coming down. Did not see that shit coming, was... totally blown away by it, and I dig it. I
love it.
So fucking excited
I
for next
I love
week.
The tower coming down. I love the it. Fact that this truck hit this tower. They kind of ignored it. They were not aware, which you can argue was stupid, but
yeah.
it came back to haunt them. It came down. It crashed, and Alexandria is really, really fucked.
Real fucked. I mean, there is still a part of me that thinks, okay, if you react fast enough, you know, if Rick is able to step up and just start, you know, real heavy duty, quick thinking leadership of like, all right, everybody look, pay attention. We're going to zombies are going to fucking start pouring in here. That shit's going to come. It's going to happen. We are going to, you know, hide or barricade ourselves or, you know, start using sounds to get them moving in a certain direction. Something. I feel like Aaron 100% needs to step out and say, everybody get down into the fucking sewers and we're going to just hop down and hide in here while, you know, maybe a few other people try to lead them away. Something. There's still, if they react fast enough, there's something that can be done in this or else, yeah, oh, everybody run into your houses and then a matter of time before they just fucking break down the doors and eat you.
There should be drills in place.
Yeah.
There should totally be drills agree. In place. If the wall comes down... here's the rally point. There yep. There has to be contingencies. One, two, I think they're going to get through this, and I think Alexandria will endure.
Yes,
here's the contingency, guys. The walls come down like this. All you pieces of shit that can't swing a machete,
oof.
You go to the designated rally point. The designated rally point is to return to your home. If you can't get to your home, you fucking go with somebody else. You go upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Go upstairs. It's going to be tough for the walkers to get at you upstairs. Get high. Get up somewhere, okay? Fucking hide. Get up mm-hmm. somewhere and hide and let the fucking damage control team start mopping these guys up. Now, this is a little different. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
However, conveniently, yeah. Abraham just found multiple devastating explosive weapons.
yep.
And he's going to blow the shit out of a bunch of zombies after they run a fuckload of them over with their giant Mercedes. I don't even know if it's a Mercedes, but they have a big box truck.
I really hope that's what happens. Oh, my God. That would be beautiful.
Yeah. I think he's going to come. I think they're going to be able to mop this up a little bit. I think they're going to... I don't know if they're going to abandon Alexandria yet unless they just have a mass, murder of many, many characters.
Ooh, I think
which they could. They could.
I think we're definitely going to lose some.
Yep, I think so too. But this is my point. You need contingencies. There needs to be rules when you go on runs. There needs to be, you know, the military operates this way for a reason. Because it works. You have to have fucking fallback plans.
Yeah. And Rick said as much in the beginning when he was talking to Maggie. He's like, shit's never simple out there. Things always go wrong. Something always goes bad. You know, right. And that's exactly it. Yeah. And no matter what plan you've got, things can tear it apart quick. And you've got to have backups always.
To quote the great bard Mike Tyson.
Ooh.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Here, let me go ahead and rephrase that properly. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Oh, you think that's funny, making fun of the way I talk, tough guy? Come over here and say that to my face.
Come over and say that. I'll fucking tear your head off and eat your fucking heart.
Yeah, I don't even care. I'll rip off your testicles. I'll eat you, bitch. I'll put a fucking tattoo on my face. I don't care. I'll fucking kill your whole family.
I'll fucking tear your mother's head off and fucking drink her blood.
You think you're so tough, huh? Come over here and say that shit to me. See what happens. I bought a fucking lion. I'll let my fucking lion kill you.
I'll fucking eat it. I'll eat the lion after he eats you.
Yeah, I don't even care. I'll eat a guy's deer off. I don't even care. Holyfield's not me. He didn't knock out 44 guys.
Shit. Welcome to the Mike Tyson Appreciation Hour, everyone.
My defense is impregnable. My style is impeccable.
Jesus Christ.
Outside of that whole raping thing, he was pretty bad.
Outside of the shittiness.
Oh, keep Jesus. Laughing, tough guy. You don't think I'll get on a plane and fly out to Portland and fucking put some teeth in your face?
I'll kill every hipster I see on my way to you.
Yeah, I don't even care. Like one punch, boom, they'll be down.
I'm going to rip this loser's mustache off and tear his head off.
I don't care. I'll tear his dick off and eat it. I don't even care. I'm crazy. What? Did you just say... I'm sorry, Mr. Tyson. Did you just say you'd eat his genitals?
Oh, my God.
You think I'm up? You think shit. I'm playing? You don't How think I'll wear...
How did I know that this episode was going to end in us talking about my Tyson?
You think I'm playing with you? I'll rip your heart out. I'll wear it on my head as a hat.
I'll make it a beanie. It's warm. Oh, shit.
I'm from Catskills, New York.
All right.
I fucking ate a baby.
I love you, Mike. I'm sorry.
Oh, shit.
Please spare me your hellacious damage punches if I meet you in real life.
Goddamn. Quad damage punches. Jesus.
Man, when he punched guys, it was like the funniest thing in the world.
Ragdoll Jones hits the ground. One punch, 10-second fight. Jesus.
Anyway.
But yeah, that's it. I mean, we've covered it. That is the end.
All right, what do you say we get to our listener comments? You think so?
Let's do it.
All right, who do you got first, Mr. Anderson?
First up, Justin Mosley. Glenn's alive, and Enid is passive-aggressive. Morgan's secret is found out. Spencer is still an idiot. Eugene is still a puss. Ron might get a gun shoved up his ass, and Alexandria shits its collective pants. Here's hoping the rest of season 6 has the pace of the first 3 episodes.
Nice. What's that guy's name?
Mr. Justin Mosley.
Justin Mosley, I just want to say that, like, I'm really offended that you'd use the word puss, because, like, what you're saying is that you're associating the glorious female genitalia with weakness, and I just want to think you should, like, maybe check your privilege, okay? All right, next comment.
While that may be true, we've got so many fucking examples on this show of glorious Viking pusses just wreaking havoc on the world. Michonne and Carol, enough said. Next up, Bert Booker. Class A fuckery.
I
cannot tell all of you guys, all of us, I'm so happy to hear fuckery catching on as a term attached to Scott Gimple and The Walking Dead. All right, so Bert Booker goes on to say, I'm going to go kill Glenn myself. Steven Ewan, watch your back. Okay, just kidding. Glad the little bastard is still alive. Good episode.
Right on.
Next, Michael Claudio. I think the way Glenn survived was plausible, so I'm okay with it. 100% there with you, Michael. However, I do believe that Glenn is a cat, and I fear this was his eighth life. I also believe that with the wall collapsing, the wolf will get free and kill someone.
Ooh.
Ooh. Major consequences for Morgan there if that shit happens. Hmm. Next up, Peter Herman. Season started off so kick-ass. Now I feel like I'm watching Fear the Walking Dead East Coast Crips. Glenn survives, which was ridiculous. Then Edith is camped out nearby. Then they waste half the show showing Glenn trying to convince Edith to come back with him. Why would I give a shit about Edith at this point?
Indeed.
Yeah, no, I kind of, I'm feeling that way about Enid as a whole. I agree. Next, Deborah Mercuro. Class A fuckery! Of course, Glenn survived. We all knew it. I thought it was interesting to pair Glenn with the Enid in that moment. Even though a lot of people could care less about Enid, including myself, I do see a lot of potential for her character. You know,
Me too.
I gotta say something.
I think there's arc potential here.
You know, I gotta say something about that. I see Enid as either straight up becoming a principal character and a main cast character and lasting maybe another season or two, or dying next episode. I don't think there's anything in between for her. It's gonna be one or the other.
Like your style.
Yeah. Next up, Karen Eagle Eye Lomas. They've set the groundwork for the preseason finale to be epic.
True.
Abraham coming back with his new toys. Daryl gonna have to put on your big boy pants. We got lots of walkers here. LOL. Only kidding. Love my Daryl. Rosita.
But there is a simmering moment of dissent. I like it.
Rosita finally saying more than one line. It's about fucking time. Glenn hasn't figured out yet that he has got to stop trying to save people who don't want saving. Thank God Carol's onto Morgan, although I don't think that wolf is much of a threat.
Hmm.
Interesting. Next, Allison James. Okay, here's my obligatory hair complaint for this episode. Carl, get a haircut and lose the smelly old hat. With the hair, he looks like a woman, a beautiful woman. Overall, I liked this one way more than the last couple episodes. I hope everyone doesn't have to scatter and lose each other like when that huge herd demolished Herschel's farm. I think, that's a great point. Yeah, and it's an interesting worry. I do think that at this point in the show's run or history or whatever you want to say, I think they're going to hunker down. I feel like there's been enough of that scattering, and Rick is going to be like, fuck this. We're going to make this work.
Yeah. Everybody run away from your wonderful community and scatter into the woods.
God, that's worked out super well.
They need to all die. Show over.
Seriously. Oh, Jesus. All right. Now, Sophia Baudet. I liked this episode and thought Glenn's barricade of dead walkers around the bottom of the trash can was clever. I really felt for everyone as they tried to take a breath, but their period of rest ended up more like gulping water like a drowning man.
Yep.
Lady Skeletor, your future plans mean nothing!
That's true.
That is some unfortunately true shit right there. And here, new Patreon, Kate Stanislawski. Another Deus Ex Machina solution to help our main characters out of an impossible situation. Used to it by now. I expected this outcome to be the Glenn cliffhanger, but there just didn't need to be all the fuckery in addition. There have been many characters who miraculously survived. Rick in the tank, Judith after the prison. In fact, Glenn is close to death in every season. But if you need to resort to primetime television fuckery to tell your story, there is also something lacking in your story. Also,
indeed.
Yeah, no, it's a very solid point. Also, says how she thinks the clash between Morgan and Carol is going to leave one or both of them very dead very soon. She thinks that, that shit ain't gonna last. One of them's got to come out on the other side. Next up, Christian Cortez. This season started all hot fire and has slowly frozen in its tracks. The last three episodes have been a giant frosty cocktail of bad decisions, stagnant storylines, and prime grand fuckery. There are so many scenes that go nowhere, only serving to frustrate the audience. Grrr. Yeah, no.
Tough to argue.
I get it. I definitely understand it. Now, from Reddit, Miss Damaris Perez. They should have just ended thank you with the viewers wondering how the hell Glenn and Nicholas were going to escape from the walkers. Not all this fucking bullshit of dumpster diving and the horseshit statement of the asshole producers or writers that Glenn will come back in one form or another. Can't say I'm not happy he's alive, but it was pretty anticlimactic.
Fact.
I feel that. I feel that, Damaris. It's true.
Yeah, that's a general feeling, man. You know, it was an unfortunate thing that they went that route.
Yeah, and you know, and it's the first time where I've ever stepped back and been like, Gimple, what the fuck were you thinking here? Because on the whole, as a showrunner, I think he's been a huge boon to the show, and I think he's been really solid. I think he's really changed the direction of the show in a good way and brought on, you know, really good producers and writers. This is the first time where I'm like, why do all that? Why do this extra bullshit and ruin the real actual tension within the content of the story? It doesn't need anything outside of itself.
Sure.
It's just nonsense. Yeah.
Well then, is that the end of our comments?
That's it. That's everybody.
Outstanding. Well, thanks everybody for sharing your thoughts. Again, they're more in depth on the Reddit and LibertyStreetGeek.net pages. Good conversations. Yeah. You can jump in. Good theories, good predictions, all good shit. Funny people.
Yes. No, I agree. If anybody out there is listening and has not hopped onto our Facebook page, our listeners are so fucking smart and so fucking funny and so fucking cool. I seriously encourage you guys to check it out and jump into the conversation and see what everybody's saying.
Right on. Now, anything you want to say before we bid these good people do? Do you have some final thoughts or predictions you want to share with the good people?
Ooh, well, you know, I got a question for you, and it kind of for both of us, really. Who do you think, because this has become, you know, a tradition for Walking Dead at this point, the mid-season finale is a let's kill some people off situation. People are going to die in this, and not just red shirt Alexandrians, but real fucking characters in this show. So, do you have any predictions who's going to not last? Who's biting the bullet?
I don't, man. It's kind of random. No, I'm just going to fucking guess at this point. Because once that wall comes down, you know, I think Boys in the Hood calls off his hit on Carl, right? I mean, survival takes precedence unless he tries to pull a fucking platoon and like off him in the middle of the chaos.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen here. I think they will endure. I think Alexandria will survive this. I think that there will be rockets to the rescue from the red man himself with his fucking dolphin smooth ways. I think he's going to slip in there, you know, move his little flippers and slide around and get in there with the rockets and do some damage.
Flipper.
I think that's going to be really necessary for the group to survive. Whether or not they rebuild the walls, I'm not sure. We know that this group that Daryl encountered, we haven't seen the last of them yet. We understand this. They're coming back into this. We haven't seen the last of that guy, Dwight, if that's his name either. I think the wall's coming down. These guys are going to rush in. I think the show needs to shed a couple characters, right? I think that's probably about time. Who is shed? I am not sure. I don't know if I think losing Morgan now would be weird because it's like there's no real arc yet. Although in real life, sometimes people die tragically before they fulfill any type of arc or goals. That's interesting. If Morgan died. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to happen. Is the wolf going to play into this somehow? He's locked up. He could arguably be the safest person in Alexandria right now. He's locked up with no way for those things to get in. So I don't know if Morgan would be compelled to open it because he's safer than anyone. In the chaos, maybe the wolf escapes. In the chaos, I don't see the wolf attempting to murder Alexandrians while there's walkers everywhere. I could see him trying to get the fuck out of there and get back to his pack. I don't know, man. I have no fucking clue. It could be the end of Eugene.
Yeah.
I don't
know. That's a character.
If the writers really want to bitch out on us, and I mean really bitch out, and I have a feeling that they might. You could see Rosita dying and Eugene experiencing the very fucking warning and the horror of not you dying, that's the bad thing. Watching somebody else die is the bad thing. That could be Rosita, because then it does two things. It pushes Eugene to be something other than what he is, one. Two.
Other than a fucking human jello mold? What the fuck is with him?
It also paves the way for Sasha and Abraham, because it would be easy to off one of the three. Well, it would be easy to off one of either Sasha or Rosita to not have to write that kind of dynamic storytelling. And I'm not saying that the Walking Dead writers are afraid of that dynamic, but I'm not convinced that that's not going to happen yet. So if I want to take a shot in the dark, I say Rosita dies and Eugene has to observe it and Eugene has to feel the way he feels about everything. And then I just say, yeah, the writers bitched out. They killed off Rosita so they could make the Sasha thing easier, right?
Ooh, that's an interesting idea.
Easy prediction. I don't think only one person's going to bite the dust.
No.
We might pick off some Alexandrians along the way.
Oh, man. Alexandrians.
Tara could die. I don't know. I don't know if we're doing something with Tara. I don't know, but...
I hope not.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going to go on here, man.
I'm not going to lie. I know it would seem weird in the sense of not much has happened with him, but Father McSweaty might not be long for this world. What the fuck is he going to do?
You know what? Here's what I'll say. If Alexandria becomes something that they have to abandon, more people will die. If they're able to withstand this and Abraham shows up with some rockets and they can fend them off, I think you'll have less casualties. I think if they all scatter, more people will die.
That's true. I agree with that.
If I just want to take a shot in the fucking dark, I'm going to say Rosita.
I agree with that, actually. And like I was saying, I think it's very one or the other with Enid. I think she either fucking offs this next episode, she's fucking dead, or she becomes actually a fairly long running character and there will be more to be seen from her. I do think that if Carl sustains any kind of injury, anything serious, it's going to happen next episode. We're going to see a serious happening with that. I think Tara's going to be okay. I think Michonne's going to be okay. Carol, Morgan, Rick. But Eugene, Father McSweaty, shit. To be honest with you, Abraham, I think they are all up for grabs at this point.
You know what? I will also put Glenn on my short list.
You know, I disagree there. I think he's going to at least last to the end of this season. Yeah. And for comic book readers, I think you know why I'm saying that. I think there's a history there, but it might verge. I hope it does diverge, to be honest with you. I really do.
They diverge on a lot of major characters, and I hope they do because...
I hope they do. I want them to surprise me, but we'll see.
All right. Well, we've kept these people long enough.
Oh, my God, we have. Holy shit. Yeah. You know, that's the problem. When I leave and I come back, I'm so excited to be back and I'm just fucking all just hornied up on this shit. God, I'm just wasting all our time.
I'm all horned up. This is not a waste of time, sir.
That's true.
Unfortunately, it's 1:30 a.m. on the East Coast.
Holy shit.
I have to work tomorrow, which is unlike me. I don't normally work Tuesdays, but
my God.
Fuck it. Whatever.
Oh, silly. Quit your job.
I know. I'm trying. Anyway, I will say... you guys have a great night. Matthew had a good night. Welcome back.
Yeah.
And we will catch you guys on the flip side. One more episode, and then we got a little bit of a breaky-poo.
That's it.
All right. We're out of here.
Bye.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of The Walking Dead Podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out libertystreetgeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.